This is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. I'm Mike and Scott. This story is from our episode about the quest to prove paranormal activity. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts. In the 19th century, a lot of serious scientists got into investigating claims of communications with the dead. Victorians were a bit obsessed with death. Mediums were popular, so it's not that surprising that scientists were interested as well. But by the 20th century, most of this interest faded away. It started to be seen as pseudoscience. In some small clusters, though, these projects continued on university campuses, even within the CIA. From 1967 to 1978, the UCLA campus was home to the Parapsychology Lab. It was a small center run by a group of researchers who were looking into all kinds of phenomena that couldn't be explained or really quantified. This lab was not officially supported or funded by the university. It was a passion project of a Hollywood actress turned psychology professor. Nicole Curry looked into the history of this lab and found some of the people who were involved.
It was the 1960s, and a 9-year-old Judith Orloff was roaming around one of her parents' dinner parties. These parties were lavish, the best china, music, mingling. Judith was introverted, so she often tried to stay out of the way. But one evening, there was a guest that she couldn't help but notice.
He was very kind of flamboyant, extroverted guy, and he would always be smiling.
His name was Eric. He was a friend of her parents.
He would talk, and he was drinking, and, you know, being so nice to me and everyone, and I got this horrible thud in my solar plexus, a sick feeling, and almost a grayness that came over him. This was in our first meeting that I felt like he was going to die.
This feeling really worried her. So she told her mom and dad about it.
I said, I don't get a good feeling about Eric. I think there's something wrong. You know, I think he might not be here very long, or whatever words the child had. And they just looked at me in horror. And I said, how can you say that about my friends? What are you talking about? Look at him. He's doing wonderfully. You know, he's a wonderful, open-hearted man, and he's enjoying his life. And they gave me all these reasons why what I might have picked up could never be true.
Judith was overcome by shame instantly, and she wondered if something was wrong with her. For days and weeks, she thought of herself as a bad seed. And then,
within that, I think it was maybe 3 months, he committed suicide.
Eric had taken his life.
And like many suicides, there were no signs of his depression.
This wasn't a one-off for Judith. It was just the beginning. She slowly began to notice just how sensitive she was. Her intuition was constantly going off, picking up on things that had gone unnoticed by others. It became overwhelming. Shopping malls, movie theaters, any crowded place felt draining. And the premonitions about her parents' friends didn't stop. It wasn't all about death, just negative outcomes, career failures, shortcomings, and all of the things she picked up on panned out. Eventually, her parents told her enough was enough.
Never mention any more of these. They are not welcome here. They're too upsetting. No more.
Judith obeyed her parents. She kept her feelings to herself, and as she got older, she wanted to turn off her intuition. Judith wanted to go to the mall with her friends, like any other teen, without feeling weighed down. She discovered that drugs and alcohol could do the trick. And quickly, things spun out of control. Judith was living in California, and after a night of partying, she got in a horrible car crash in Topanga Canyon.
After that experience, my parents felt like I was killing myself, and so they intervened and they forced me to go see a psychiatrist.
Her psychiatrist wanted to know more about Judith's excessive use of alcohol and drugs. And many sessions later, she finally told him about her intuition, the predictions.
He listened. He didn't judge. He didn't put me on medication. He didn't look frightened.
Instead, Judith's psychiatrist referred her to a tiny research lab at the University of California, Los Angeles, the Parapsychology Lab. Judith couldn't believe what she was hearing.
It was like the sun burst through some dense clouds. It was like, wow, I didn't even know anything like that existed. I had no idea. I didn't have any friends who had this ability, and to have a lab that actually studied it with scientists and psychics and people who went out and researched ghosts of all things. I can't tell you, I felt hope.
Judith set up a meeting with the woman in charge of the parapsychology lab, Thelma Moss. Thelma was a psychology professor who had walked an unusual path to academia. In the 1950s, she was known as Thelma Schnee. She was working as a screenwriter and an actress, starring in shows like Lights Out, The Devil in Glencairn.
The Lord have mercy on you, Steenie.
Aye, the Lord have mercy.
Before you go, I'll give you some more air.
But when her husband died 2 days after Thelma gave birth to her daughter, she fell into a deep depression. Then she underwent a course of LSD psychotherapy, a completely new and uncharted frontier at the time. And she got a lot better. Thelma left her Hollywood career, got a PhD in psychology at UCLA, and started teaching there in 1966 as a professor of psychology. The year after, she opened the parapsychology lab. Judith remembers meeting Thelma like it was yesterday.
It was just one of those pivotal days in your life. Now, at the time, I was a hippie, and I was dressed all in hippie clothes and tie-dyes and wild, wild hair. And she was a woman in a white coat that said Dr. Thelma Moss, embroidered on her white coat like doctors used to have. And she was very serious, very academic. She was welcoming, but not overly friendly.
They met on the first floor of the Neuropsychiatric Institute on UCLA's campus, where Thelma's office was. Judith was 19 at the time.
And she said, I'd like to test out your intuitive abilities, and I'll give you my keys. She had a whole bunch of keys on a keychain, and I want you to hold them and just try and clear your mind and just tell me what you see. Just tell me whatever comes to you. And I never, ever done anything like that before.
Judith wrapped her fingers around the set of jumbled keys and closed her eyes.
And after I relaxed a little bit, I saw a dresser that was very plain with a lamp on it, with the bed on the right, and a picture of a girl in a picture frame. And so I shared that with her, and you know, she looked at me and she said, I think, you know, you have some really good intuitive abilities, and I'd like to invite you to come and volunteer in our lab and learn about all this, and we could train you.
Judith was ecstatic. She was finally going to learn more about her abilities, but the enthusiasm for this work was not shared by many on campus.
We knew we were living on borrowed time.
That's Barry Taff. He's a self-proclaimed psychic, and he was one of the research assistants who worked in the lab back then. He's a parapsychologist today. At first, the lab operated like any other research group on campus. They conducted experiments on telepathy, and people like Barry spent time looking into another ability among psychics, remote viewing.
The idea is simple. If I'm here and you're in LA and I don't know where you are, could I see things where you are even when you're not there to send me the information with your own mind?
You can think of it as the Netflix original series, Stranger Things. This was one of the abilities the main character Eleven possessed. The show was set in the 1980s, and Eleven often spied on a Russian agent. Some of the lab findings made it into scientific journals, though it was hard to get their work peer-reviewed. Barry says the thinking was publish or perish, and he thinks that's what really kept the lab afloat until the ship started to sink.
We knew it was inevitable that they'd shut us down, and unfortunately, Dr. Moss did everything in her power to make sure that happened.
Barry says Thelma got really interested in something called Curlian photography. Thelma had learned about this during a trip to the Soviet Union. It's a method of taking pictures that show a glowing energy or light around things like your hand or a leaf. It's not a regular photo. It uses high voltage electricity to create these images. People thought this glow was an aura, a field that reflected a person's mood or health. And Thelma wanted to study this energy in plants. Judith remembers helping out with this project.
What you would see, it would be in black and white. And what you would see is kind of bristly energy projections coming from your finger or the plant. And it would surround the plant. And sometimes it was full and vibrant, and sometimes it would just be minimal, and it didn't look that strong.
Thelma published her findings from this work in 1976. It was called The Phantom Leaf Effect Revealed Through Curlian Photography. It generated interest, and Thelma was featured on TV programs like The Outer Space Connection, explaining this electric field or aura.
Voltage going through the object. Some people who are more inclined to the occult or to the mystical will call it an aura. And they will compare, for example, in famous paintings, whether it's of Buddha or Jesus or Mohammed or anywhere around the world, there are these auras that are circling around the head. And they would like to believe that what we are photographing with this electrical photography is a representation of that.
But there were skeptics, and from inside the lab, people like Barry.
Do I believe that had any paranormal implications? No. It was neurophysiological, but it wasn't paranormal.
Barry wasn't alone in his thinking. After Thelma published her findings, scientists explained the glowing images as a natural effect. They said the light in Curlian photos came from moisture and electricity, not from a mysterious energy. It looked strange, but most experts saw it as a camera effect, not proof of anything paranormal. While Thelma was fixated on Curlian photography, Barry and another research assistant from the lab, Carrie Gaynor, were doing interviews about something totally different, paranormal investigations. People would often call the lab, wanting them to investigate paranormal activity. The KABC show Eyewitness LA visited the lab in the 1970s. They spoke with Carrie.
The major motivation for people calling our lab and complaining about haunted houses is fear. Sometimes it's curiosity.
They talked to Barry, too.
It's said that, or it's believed among researchers in this field, that this type of phenomena is not dangerous. Well, generally this is the case. However, I myself ran into an investigation.
They talked to Barry and Carrie about a recent case that was gaining attention. A few years before this interview, the lab was contacted by a woman named Doris Bither from Culver City, California. She claimed her home was haunted. Barry and Carrie investigated, and they showed their findings to KABC.
In this first photograph, this is a control picture. We have the room with the only available lighting as a candle. We have the occupant of the house, the corner of the room where the phenomenon appears to manifest. Within a few minutes, she said there was activity in the room. The stench was present. The icy cold came in. We took a picture. We got a total bleaching effect here, or fogging.
Barry and Carrie concluded that Doris was dealing with a poltergeist, a ghost responsible for loud noises and objects being thrown around. This fascinated viewers. But Barry has always had a feeling that UCLA had the opposite reaction. They were attracting unwanted attention to the university and the fact that they were doing this work. By 1978, little research from the lab was being published. Thelma was reportedly still knee-deep into Curley and photography, despite conflicting evidence. And Barry and Carrie were investigating more and more paranormal cases. And that's when Barry says he had a dream.
My dream was very melodramatic, like a horror movie.
The dream is about the lab. Most of everyone is there except for Judith, who had left by now. In walks Thelma's boss. He says that he's really disappointed with their work. But as he's talking, the entire room begins to violently shake.
And then suddenly we felt that we were falling.
The floor is now tilting sideways, forcing everyone to grab onto something to keep from sliding.
And I look out the only window to the lab, which is facing west, and out towards the parking lot and another part of the campus. And there's a lady, it looks like on a metal plank, that was up there beating horses with a whip. And I, what the heck is this? And then next to her was a horribly mangled dog, like it was killed in an accident or something.
And then everything stops. The shaking, the falling sensation. Barry steps outside of the lab to find that the rest of the building is gone. It's just grass. And when he turns around to go back into the lab, it's also not there. Instead, in front of him is a 19th century funeral coach. Sitting in the driver's seat is a rotten corpse-like woman with a mangled dog by her side. And slowly, and very eerily, she turns to Barry and says,
"I've brought you here to bury you because you're dead."
Two weeks later, the parapsychology lab was shut down. Thelma Moss continued her studies privately. She died in 1997 at the age of 79. Barry Taff and Carrie Gaynor's poltergeist case was made into a movie in 1981 called The Entity, starring Barbara Hershey.
Do you hear that?
As for Judith Orloff, the volunteer who found a home in this lab before its demise, she went to medical school with the dream of becoming a psychiatrist.
When I went through medical school, I kind of set all my training with Thelma aside, and I got just into the science, so the pendulum swung for me. And I was afraid of people thinking I was weird, and so I didn't really explore it during my medical school. But then when I graduated and opened up my private practice, I had this patient. And because I'd strayed from trusting my intuition, I had a dream that she was going to kill herself. And because there was no clinical fact that really backed that up, I didn't pursue it. And she, the next few weeks, overdosed on the antidepressants that I prescribed for her and ended up in an ICU in a hospital in Los Angeles, and that was my real re-examining everything, as I felt like I had harmed her by not listening to my intuition.
The patient survived, but Judith promised herself that she would find a way to bridge these two worlds. She's managed to do that. She's been practicing psychiatry for over 40 years now.
It's the way I listen. If I sit with somebody, I listen to my gut. I listen to see if I have any flashes or knowings that come in. So I listen that way, and I also listen with my linear mind. And I have a great love of traditional medical knowledge, and so I think that's why I always wanted to do both. So my main interest in intuition and what I've learned at Thelma is for health and healing. It's not so much to prove paranormal realities.
That story was reported by Nicole Curry.